happy Friday after Thanksgiving to you. It's a Juno afternoon, Friday edition, with me, Andy Klein, your host for today. Thanks for joining me. It's getting a little bit blustery and windy and rainy out there, and therefore Eagle Crest downtown rail jam has been postponed. But today on Juno afternoon, we'll be talking to Elaine Schroeder about climate change. That's talking about that weather coming. Also, the UAS class on small group communication and team building will be here. We'll talk to a public market vendor and members of the high school swim team about Christmas trees. That's all coming up, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, and more on a Juno afternoon. First, here's National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Taos Pueblo veteran Tony Reyna was recently honored for his service in World War II. He's a Bataan Death March survivor. During a ceremony in Albuquerque, New Mexico, some fellow citizens from Taos Pueblo sang Reyna what they called a Bataan song. The song was revived a few years ago. Taos Pueblo men used it when they were being shipped overseas during the war to serve with the New Mexico National Guard. The song was a reminder of their home to liven their spirits. Reyna was among men deployed to the Philippines who became prisoners of war and forced to make a long trek. The 99-year-old's daughter, Marie, one of four children, says her father accepted the honoring on behalf of his fellow comrades.
11 men from our village were part of the Bataan Death March. He says 12, but Mr. Henry Lujan was deployed out of the Philippines, so he was not captured. And one of the first acts he did after seeing his family was to notify the families whose men did not return. My father was on the burial detail. He says he buried over 1,000 men, and that's pretty close to more than 3/4 of the men on Bataan that did not return.
His children say one of the lessons they learned was not to waste food. As a POW, Reyna and others didn't eat for days. Diane Reyna says her dad's tribal knowledge helped him survive, such as hunting in the mountains and knowing aspects of living off the land.
He spotted something on the ground. It's a succulent, but it's a ground cover. But he remembers his mom preparing that as a vegetable. So he gathered all of that up and boiled it and ate it. So that kind of indigenous knowledge, how he was raised, it helped him survive through that experience.
After the war, Reyna became a Pueblo leader and built a Native American arts business, which is now more than 60 years old. He credits staying out of bars and staying busy as ways which helped him overcome trauma from the war. Reyna shared some words for younger generations.
Stay in school and to be for himself, be respectful, do what you can to help the community.
Reyna's honoring included the presentation of a plaque from the Indian Pueblo Cultural Center and the presentation of a Warrior Pendleton blanket, and concluded with a song. This is our second day featuring the chairman of the Senate Indian Affairs Committee, John Barrasso of Wyoming. Matt Laszlo reports on what the committee's been up to under the Republican senator.
Barrasso is proud that in this gridlock Congress, his committee has been active, passing 20 bipartisan bills thus far. One bill that's passed out of the committee would help with housing needs in Indian country, while another that passed the full Senate addressed the spike in suicides in elementary and secondary schools in Indian country. Former chairman of the committee, John McCain of Arizona, says Barrasso is a great fit as chairman.
I think he's doing a great job. Frankly, he's addressing some of the fundamental issues that affect Indian country.
It's not just Republicans. Montana Senator John Tester is the top Democrat on the committee. He says there's been a lot of continuity between Barrasso's tenure as chairman and when Democrats were in charge.
There's a lot of bills he's taken up that we took up that were important issues, so I got no complaints.
But there's one big problem hanging over Barrasso's head, getting floor time for his committee's priorities. Republican Congressman Tom Cole of Oklahoma is one of two Native Americans currently in Congress.
Many members don't have significant tribal presence or Native American population. There's large portions of the Congress that are not directly concerned in these issues and frankly not particularly knowledgeable about them.
Now leaders across Indian country are watching to see if Barrasso can use his perch as a member of the Republican leadership team in the Senate to get his committee's bills quickly considered. I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by WanderingBold.com, providing American Indian crafts and supplies since 1969. Shipping nationwide, virtually everything you need to powwow is at WanderingBold.com. Holiday delivery on orders placed by December 15th. Support by Indigenous Governance Programs at the University of Arizona, educating practitioners and policymakers to implement nation building at home and create stronger Native nations. Course offerings at igp.arizona.edu.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Support for this station comes from the Treadwell Ice Arena, located at 105 Savico Road in Douglas. Treadwell Ice Arena is open 7 days a week, offering drop-in open skating, hockey, and a variety of special events. We are the proud home of the Crimson Bears hockey team, youth, adult, hockey, and figure skating programs. More information at juno.org/parksrec/icerink or call 586-0410.
Support comes from Northern Audiology and Hearing Services in the Jordan Creek Center. Northern Audiology offers diagnostic medical hearing expertise and digital technology hearing instruments. 789-6780.
Well, Marvin Gaye there, talking about the ecology. Boy, that song must have come out over 40 years ago, and it was a topic of discussion then, and Elaine Schroeder's here to talk about it right now with us, part of the Climate Action Film Series, and as you were saying, Elaine, and a whole bunch of other stuff going on as the Paris Summit starts happening, and our local reaction that we can have to the what's being talked about there.
Yeah, I'm even calling it Climate Change Weekend in Juneau. As the glacier continues melting. So the first event is going to occur tomorrow. And some of you may know that the Paris March that was expected to draw hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands, somebody said up to 2 million people, has been canceled by the authorities. And so what the word has gone out that every little community asking that something happens that we send to the Paris conference, we send to the UN. And so what we're going to do in Juneau tomorrow at 2 o'clock at the Glacier, so the Glacier parking lot, we'll try to get to Photo Point. Skip Gray is going to take a photo of all of us Juneauites, with or without signs, to urge the heads of state that are attending the big climate change summit in Paris to drastically reduce carbon emissions and replace that with renewable energy.
And you were saying that what was the message that went out was across the world, small towns could do this, and if they could figure out an iconic place that talked about ecology or climate change to go there.
Yeah. I mean, they even said something like your dump or your, you know, some place that related to climate change. And all of a sudden, I was sitting with some girlfriends. We went, oh, my gosh, do we have it, man? You know, we've got the glacier.
Yeah,
I mean, how many places have the glacier? And there are events happening tomorrow, Sunday. So, you know, we're kind of late in the time, U.S. in the world time zone. But there will be events. And the idea is we're going to send these photos to 350.org, which is an international climate change activism group. And they will pick out ones to be flashed at these rallies around the world. So we might even get on, you know, a screen in Berlin or Melbourne. And there are over 2,000 climate events this weekend around the world in more than 150 countries. And so our event at 2 o'clock tomorrow at the Glacier parking lot, at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center parking lot, will be one of many. And I figure it's great to be a drop in the bucket.
And you guys have been showing the Climate Action film series all month long. So tell me just a little bit about that film that you guys are showing, Merchants of Doubt.
Yeah. So this is absolutely perfect. Sunday, November 29th at 4:30. Monday, this coming Monday, November 30th at 7 p.m. at the good old Gold Town Theater. We're going to be showing Merchants of Doubt, which is a documentary and got high reviews. Whenever I pick these movies, I go on Rotten Tomatoes and some other sites.
Right.
And this one has 4 out of 5 stars, highly, highly rated. And that's good for a documentary. And friends of mine have seen it and said it's superb. It's a documentary about fake experts and pseudoscientists that are employed by oil corporations to spread doubt in the media about scientific facts concerning climate change and how they funded fake front groups that spouted, that regurgitated this false information. And now, I don't know if you know this, but there was the state of New York just sued ExxonMobil, and they're investigating whether ExxonMobil misled the public and investors about the risk of climate change. So what's coming out in the media a lot is that Exxon and it'll be other oil companies and coal companies as well, knew the science of climate change. They've got superb scientists working for them. That decades ago, they knew that carbon was increasing the temperature on the planet and what that would do. Their bottom line was in danger because if people found out, they'd either want to regulate, tax, or keep it in the ground. And so what happened is that those lies in America put us back decades because people are still confused. They don't know about this. So anyways, the movie talked about what a devious practice this was inherited from the tobacco industry. Do you remember years ago how the tobacco industry, they did the same thing? They hired fake scientists and had fake think tanks that came out and saying, well, we don't really know if tobacco causes lung cancer.
Now, were they fake scientists or were they scientists that were just willing to kind of be bought, or they completely have no credentials?
Well, this is interesting. I just read that some of the very scientists that were paid to testify for the tobacco industry are the very same ones who are testifying for the oil companies. Now,
the emissions, you know. It's the same.
what I read, and by the way, Merchants of Doubt comes out of a very highly regarded book that was written by a Harvard history of science professor called Naomi Oreskes, and she wrote that with her colleague Eric Conway. So the whole movie is based on this book that is absolutely factually checked. So anyway, I think you can hire somebody. Okay,
right, yeah.
To do something. They could have, I think one person they'd say, like Jim Smith, PhD, but he had his PhD from an unaccredited university in English literature or something like that. So you can always, there might have been some actual people with degrees in science, but there are people who will do this for money.
Yeah, interesting.
Obviously.
Okay, so that's Merchants of Doubt. It's playing Sunday at 4:30 and then Monday at 7 p.m. at the Gold Town Nickelodeon. And then tell me a little bit more about how folks can get involved in the virtual Paris.
Okay. Just show up. Wear colorful clothes if you have them. If you're, if you dress in all black like I do, don't worry. Just put a scarf on. Just a skip gray. The guy knows it. And so you just show up at 2. We'll put us all together, maybe have a sign or two saying what we're doing. I'd like Juno in Paris, or Paris, we love you, or something like that. And then Skip will snap a few pics. Hopefully, if it's not too foggy, we can see the glacier.
Right.
And he was even thinking, or I was kind of thinking, of putting a picture superimposing on that of how the glacier used to look,
like
which would be totally cool,
20
years,
right,
30 years ago.
Right.
And they just show up. It'll take 15 minutes, and they can go to the, Thanksgiving market.
Yeah, that's right.
And do their thing. We really hope they come.
And we're going to talk to folks about Public Market coming up next. You're going to be actually at a booth there tomorrow
as
well. And you're busy as always.
I'm
busy, 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 having fun.
Yeah,
That's what retirement does to you, right?
I know.
Well, Elaine, thanks so much for coming in. Once again, it's Merchants of Doubt that's playing Sunday at 4:30 and Monday at 7 p.m. And then tomorrow
at Goldtown.
That's at Goldtown Nickelodeon. Tomorrow, gather in the parking lot by Mendenhall Glacier at 2 p.m. for Virtual Paris. Going to be taking a photo of Juneau folks in front of the glacier in solidarity with the worldwide rallies preceding the UN Paris climate.
And I just want to mention, I just got a news magazine in the mail moments ago, and the cover has a picture of the Earth over the Eiffel Tower, and it says, "Last chance for planet Earth, high stakes at the planet Paris Climate Conference." So
there
that gives us a sense of the importance. Thank
Elaine,
you.
Elaine, thanks so much. That's Elaine Schroeder, and we'll continue on now with more from Juneau Afternoon.
On the oceans and upon our seas, fish full of mercury.
Welcome back to the KTO studios. Andy Klein here with you for Juneau Afternoon. Strong winds warning is in effect right now, mostly cloudy right now, but that's what's happening for the rest of the day. But for the rest of the night, it's going to be mostly cloudy with a chance of rain, and then very windy tonight with rain, gusts up to 40 miles an hour, so there's kind of a wind warning in effect, strong wind warning in effect. The rain has come, and it looks like it's going to be here for a few days and a little bit warmer temperatures. Wah, 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 wah. But, you know, this is how it goes here in November. But hopefully it'll start snowing and stop raining. Right now with me is Matt Magnuson. Matt, thanks so much for joining us here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Matt's from the UAS class on small group communication and team building. And you got a bunch of stuff going on. Sounds pretty fun.
We do. We have a lot of stuff going on.
So tell me, first of all, just what the class is. What's that class on?
So the class is communications, and it's primarily based around just overall team building and how to work in small groups. So,
okay.
Yeah.
So that can encompass all kinds of different projects, and you can sort of build on that doing all kinds of stuff, right?
Exactly. It deals with a lot of dealing with difficult people, which we all need help with
people,
that.
People in my life know what that's like.
Exactly. Yep. Well, I know what that's like with everyone, you know? It's hard.
Yeah, so that's an interesting thing to think about, that when you're talking about small group communication, team building, it's a little bit about the weakest link in the chain, right? And making sure that everyone's brought to be contributing members.
Sure. I mean, it's like a sharks and minnows kind of thing, you know. If there's one link,
right,
it's broken.
Right.
It's hard.
And then there's also sometimes one that's too strong and wants to take charge too much and doesn't let other people get involved in those things, right?
Yep, the overbearing person.
Yes.
Yeah,
that's
the funnest one.
That's the one I am.
Well, that's okay. That's fun, though. That's a fun position.
Yeah, right. But it's interesting to then learn how to work in a group, to bring a little of that back or to allow people to come forward who otherwise might not feel as comfortable.
Definitely. And it's interesting because the class has different dynamics. So, I mean, we have so many different people in the class alone, so it's been interesting to, like, work in the class with all these different people.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. So you've got a ton of stuff going on that all, of course, involves the group dynamics and building team and stuff. So let's talk about a few of them. One here I see is a food drive.
So the food drive and we're doing an art show is kind of put together.
Okay.
So we thought in the beginning we were kind of brainstorming. What's something that we could do that's public that would kind of benefit Juneau as a whole? And we thought the art program is going away. Mm-hmm. Super sad. I mean, you know, art is super important.
At UAS.
At UAS.
At UAS.
Yeah.
Yep, right.
So you can no longer major in art anymore, and it's slowly there's other changes that are predicted to come. So we as a group thought, let's somehow make art more sustainable this semester. Let's do something to really push it up. So we slowly started to think about, you know, who does art and what kind of art is on campus. And when we were reaching out through people, we found there's artists of all kinds. You know, people do charcoal, photography, you know, we even doing written word kind of poetry type thing.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, there's a ton of people, especially on campus, but is it an art show that's specific to students?
It is. It's just to students and faculty.
Okay.
And actually, we're still taking submissions up until Tuesday of
okay.
next week.
And that, so, and as you say, it's the widest possible definition of what people would think of as art.
Exactly. It's basically, you know what, we're flexible. If you have some type of art, then email us and we'll be like, hey, yeah, that
and
sounds cool.
Is there a date for the show when the show starts, or is it a one-day thing?
There
or?
Is. It goes, we're going to set up in the morning of the 3rd.
Okay.
We're going to kind of have like a campus kickoff type thing on the 3rd, so at 5 o'clock. And we're going to keep it set up all weekend up until the Tuesday after, which is the 8th.
Okay, so it's the 3rd through the 8th.
Yep.
Great, yeah. And where is it going to be?
Egan Library.
Okay.
Yeah.
So is it going to kind
easy.
Of be out throughout the whole library?
It's going to be on the bottom section.
Yeah.
So you can kind of just like look over it, and we're going to move all those chairs that are in there, and it's going to be a really cool space.
Is there all kinds of stuff? Like, is there mixed media? Is there some electronic stuff? Is there...
We've debated between that because there is
stuff,
a projector.
Or, uh-huh.
So we're going to try to do maybe some projections of some pictures and things like that, but... You know, it's a library, so we
yeah.
have to keep it quiet.
Digital art, though, is such an important part of what's happening in the art world in general. And I think that's the discussion happening among a lot of museums. How do we represent these digital art things, you know, and even virtual reality
yeah.
art and all that kind of stuff? You know,
totally.
It's pretty interesting.
Yeah, and it's been hard because
yeah.
we've kind of, you know, we've had a lot of different ideas of the ways to go. And we have, you know, limited resources. We have about eight or nine different students and...
So is there an example of a way that you guys worked together as a team to tackle some of those issues? Or
yeah, so it's been kind of a voting process almost. We've had so many different ideas that have been bounced around over the semesters, the last 2 months, and some of them have made it this far and some of them haven't. And it's been interesting to see what people kind of tackle which different ideas. And so it's been... You know, it's been a, kind of like a Play-Doh, I like to describe it. It's,
right.
it's formed over the time. And that's actually the title of this is Blank Canvas Art Show, because
okay.
it really is a blank canvas at the start, and it has so many different aspects to it.
Very cool. Now, how do you tie in the food drive with that?
So what we're asking people to do is bring a non-perishable can, and they can just kind of, you know, dump it there. You can bring as many as you like, and we'll collect them. And then at the end of the week, we'll bring them to the Southeast Alaska Food Bank.
Great. And... do you have a goal for how many cans or how many folks you hope come or anything like that?
We want as many as possible.
That's
so we
one.
Don't have any goal, so, you know, but
yeah.
we want, you know, as many people in cans as we can get.
How many people are in the class?
14.
Oh, okay. So not a nice good size.
Yeah,
like
and you
nice
know, what we
class,
did
yeah.
was we figured we should break it up. So half of us is doing kind of like the PR, the art, the programming, things like that. And then the other half is doing things for the can. Food drive.
Okay,
yeah.
cool, yeah. So yeah, lots to do on both ends.
Definitely.
For sure, right.
Yeah.
Okay, well, cool. So it's a UAS class on small group communication and team building, and they are doing a food drive and an art show. So the Blank Canvas Art Show starts December 3rd and goes to the 8th. But you're taking submissions still and through...
Up until Tuesday. Yeah, and then we have an email. It's artshow_UAS@yahoo.com. And so I'll be the one, Matt Magnuson, who answers those emails. And if you are...
At Yahoo?
Yahoo.com.
You're using Yahoo still?
We're using... That's
Throwback.
What I've always used.
I love it.
Gmail is too much. I am not technological at all.
I love it. It just makes me nostalgic to hear
it's
at Yahoo.com.
Easy. We debated between AOL or Yahoo, but we
AOL.
Thought AOL is
CompuServe.
Too much. That is what my grandma uses.
7735 at CompuServe. But okay, so that's artshow_UAS@yahoo.com.
Exactly.
Awesome, people. And then is there stuff on the website? Anything anywhere people can find out a little bit more about this?
You'll
or?
See posters kind of
okay.
posted around, but besides that, it's been kind of limited.
Okay, great. So artshow_UAS@yahoo.com if you have submissions or if you want to get in touch with Matt and the rest of the team at the small group communication and team building class at UAS. It's the art show, the Blank Canvas Art Show coming up December 3rd. And going through the 8th and bring a can of food or many cans of food and come and make a contribution to the art community and also to the folks who need food here in Juneau. Matt, thanks so much.
Well, thank you so
for
much.
For coming in.
Yeah,
really
thank
appreciate,
you.
Appreciate hearing about all about it. Now here's Garrison Keeler with Writer's Almanac.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 27th of November, 2015. 1910, on this day, Pennsylvania Station in New York City opened. Beautiful example of Beaux-Arts architecture, pink granite, stately columns, skylit interior modeled after a Roman bath, the waiting room a block and a half long, 150-foot high ceilings. The great building was torn down in 1963 and replaced with a basement, which one architectural writer recently called an architectural crime scene. Outside of the U.S. penitentiary system, he said, it is hard to think of a more joyless building. But the destruction of Penn Station helped to start the architectural preservation movement in this country. The New York Landmarks Law was passed 2 years after that, just in time to save Grand Central Station, Radio City Music Hall, and many other historical landmarks. And ugly though it be, Penn Station today is the busiest train station in the Western Hemisphere. It was on this day in 1582 William Shakespeare married Anne Hathaway. She was 26 years old, 8 years older than he, considered an old maid by 16th century standards. She gave birth to their first child, Susanna, 6 months after the wedding. They lived together with Shakespeare's parents, and 2 years later, she gave birth to twins, a boy and a girl, Hamnet and Judith. And sometime after the twins were born, Shakespeare moved to London to pursue an acting career. He came back to Stratford occasionally. She never visited him in London, so they spent most of the rest of their marriage apart. But he moved back when he retired, and they spent the last 6 years of his life together. And she's buried next to him in the Church of the Holy Trinity in Stratford. And it's the birthday of the writer who said, a little bit of too much is just enough for me, James Agee, born Knoxville, 1909. Author, along with the photographer Walker Evans, of the book Let Us Now Praise Famous Men, and of the autobiographical novel A Death in the Family, which came out after James Agee's death at the age of 45. Here's a poem for today by John Updike, entitled Tools. Tell me, how do the manufacturers of tools turn a profit? I have used the same clawed hammer for 40 years. The screwdriver, misted with rust, once slipped into my young hand a new householder's. Obliviously, tools wait to be used, the pliers, notched mouth agape like a cartoon shark's, the wrench with its jaws on a screw, the plane still sharp enough to take its fragrant, curling bite, the brace and bit still fit to chew a hole in pine like a patient thought, the tape rule, its inches unaltered though I have shrunk, the carpenter's angle, still absolutely right, though I have strayed, the wooden bubble level from my father's meager hoard, their stubborn shapes pervade the cellar, enduring with a thrift that shames our wastrel lives. Tools, a poem by John Updike from his selected poems, published by Alfred A. Knopf and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, you can subscribe to the Poetry Magazine podcast and the Poetry Off the Shelf podcast in the iTunes Store or listen at poetryfoundation.org. And by Staples, with technology products, copy and print, shipping and other solutions for businesses of any size. Learn more at Staples and staples.com. Staples, make more happen. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch. Welcome back to the studios here at
KTOO, where Peter Metcalf and Steve Nelson have joined me. Peter Metcalf, of course, the organizer and madman behind the public market that's just starting up. And 33rd year is what you're just telling
that's
me.
That's right.
Huh? Wow.
And, it keeps getting bigger and better.
So it's also in the Jack as well now,
right?
It grew out a few years ago into the Jack as well.
That's right.
So how many vendors do you have altogether?
Well, we have about 150 individual or people assigned spaces, but it's probably around 170 to 180 vendors in all, because there's a lot of doubling up and tripling up of vendors. So there's a lot of people.
So many of my friends are, this is like the absolute culmination of frenzy, knitting and, coloring and doing art and all that stuff. It just leads up to this is a big
huge event. A majority of the vendors they only show at the public market, and that's what makes it unique and, a truly Alaskan experience, because most of these people are from all points of the compass and from Alaska. So
is it all Alaskans?
We have people from Ohio and Nevada and California, but there's generally a connection that, they're coming up here to visit friends and paying for the trip.
So. Oh, yeah, cool.
But you also have some Alaskans that are from pretty far north, normally aren't down in this area.
No, I think the farthest flung is Shishmaref, Chukchi Sea.
They do such beautiful carvings.
Ivory carvings, the moccasins are really popular.
Yeah.
But I brought Steve along because Steve has been on the periphery of this since the very beginning.
Yeah, it's true. I've been coming down to probably every public market, by myself or with the family. And I also have the distinction of being the skinniest, most pathetic Santa that you ever had.
Oh, no.
There. Oh, yeah.
Steve Nelson is Santa? Well, he can grow a beard. He can grow a beard. I don't know.
Yeah, not like that, though. I had to put one on,
The kids really liked them, but the parents were like, what?
it was kind of weird,
When
you got the
notion.
Suit on, you're magical, right? And so you're walking around, and the kids were running up and hugging my leg and stuff like that, and the parents were kind of raising an eyebrow going, what is up with this baggy, pathetic suit hanging off you and this scraggly beard? This was years ago. It's this economy. Oh,
very good. Very good.
What are you going to do?
That was a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's you'd be a good Santa. Yeah, a little pillowcase.
No, I did.
In there,
I put a pillow in there, but it couldn't hide the fact that I was 150 pounds all wet. But then I got used to that. I'm walking around in the suit all day, and then at the end of my shift, I took the suit off and I went back out, and I'd be kind of looking around, and kids would be there, and I'd smile and kind of wave at them, and they'd run behind their parents.
The magic is gone.
It was so gone. But you don't even know this, Peter. I had a red and white station wagon when I did that one year, and when I got off, I was asked to come out to a kid's party. And so I left the suit on at the end of the day, and that second day, and I got in my red and white car, and I raced from my shift at the public market out to the valley to a kid's party, but I was starving. I hadn't eaten all day. So I pull into McDonald's in my red and white station wagon. I hop out, and I go in as Santa, because there's no time to take it off and put it back on, And McDonald's went, Santa's here! And they gave me free food, and I hung around for about 15 minutes and kind of did a gig, got fed and got back in my
Santa
station wagon and took off. And then it was the same when I showed up at the party. It was great. I should just wear that thing around all year.
The real pretend Santa will be at the public market on Sunday at 11 o'clock.
Not me.
Steve's successor. This one's actually real beard and a little bit heavy.
Very good. That's what you want. Jolly.
No kids are listening right now,
no,
right?
No, certainly not.
We don't want to listen to this. Pull back the curtain or anything.
No. Yeah, kids, after they listen to Terry Gross, then they tune into June afternoon.
I think we're safe.
Every preschooler's schedule. Yeah, no, there's no kids listening.
But I got to say, Peter, after all these years of going to the market, it's usurping the downtown area. It started out, I remember, in one part
of the building.
That's what I was going to ask. And how many vendors were the were in the first year?
Well, the first year, first several years, it was in the Sheffield Ballroom, and we could get about 85 vendors in there. And but right from the beginning, I mean, it was just a good idea. It just happened to be, and we were full. We had every space allotted before we opened, and then we had trouble opening the ballroom doors because there were so many people in the lobby waiting to get in, and I was like, this is a good problem.
Yeah. Wow, yeah. And yes, it's true. I mean, in the 25 years I've been in town here, it was absolutely an established thing that you did that was a part of, you know, the holiday season, kind of the unofficial beginning of the Christmas mm-hmm. season in Juneau is always public market. And
I've been involved in a lot of events like Steve has here in this town, and you know, this one is the thing I like about it is we have, you know, a lot of people come to it, and yet everybody's really happy, you know, and you see people hugging each other. They haven't seen each other
in
a year.
It's true. It's a different, you know, often the shopping experience is stressful and you see a lot of strained faces. And this one is never like that.
It's always
kind of fun and happy.
Kind of a social event.
Super
too.
Social. Yeah. And then also because there's such a variety of different vendors and different, like the Raptor Center. Are they there again this year?
Oh, they are.
Yeah. I mean, it's always, right? That's amazing. They have some incredible creature there that they have on their arm. And I mean, all those different things that.
We finally found the right roost for them.
Oh, okay.
In the Miller Room, because they were just talking to me about that. We used to have them on a corner on the inside of the Sheffield Ballroom, and the birds would just get too stressed out.
Yeah.
And this year they're able to bring down this bald eagle, which they haven't been able to do before because, cool. You know, the room is just right.
Yeah, so. Such a cool thing.
Yeah.
And how do you balance the whole making it an event that's great for kids and also an event that's, you know, great for people who really want to shop?
It's kind of random in the sense of who gets in. You know, this application period begins in July, and then to be honest, I don't exercise a lot of judgment in terms of the product, because otherwise you'd have fishing gear and knives and outdoor, you know, backpacks, and I'd be satisfied. But, but you know, it turns out a lot of people like jewelry.
Yes, that's right.
So, and then, but we, you know, if somebody applies who has toys for children, I'll find a way to get them in.
Oh, is that right? Yeah, yeah. And what are some of the oldest standing, you know, continuous, been there for all 33 years businesses?
Well, Ella Bentley Johnson, who's a jeweler, she's back this year, joining another vendor. But she's been there since 1983 when we began. So, and there used to be T. Terry Harvey Armadillo Cafe.
Don't even say the words.
You know, everybody's like, oh,
breaks your heart.
But this year we got Amanda Cohan back, who does the Great Crepe Escape.
Oh, yeah. There you go. Right.
That's where I found Steve as he was waiting in line. I just grabbed
busted.
Him. Yeah.
Eating crepes.
But those crepes are to die for.
Yeah,
they're
great.
Sweet and savory.
That's right. And I had a savory, and that filled me up. And it was
I had a sweet.
And Amanda's a very nice young woman, and does a really good job, as do the other vendors. Like, I mean, we have a full food court, and that's really fun. And it's a place that you can sit down and visit while you're...
Yeah, that's been a change, right? Having a real full food court. It used to be just a couple of vendors.
Well,
as
it's
I remember.
Always been a... actually, from the beginning of food court, but sorry to contradict you.
It's all right. That's what I'm here for.
But it hasn't always been as professional as it is, and we learned over time that we really need to have professional vendors in the food court, because otherwise it's kind of chaotic, and, you know, somebody will, without telling me, start frying some food, and suddenly there's a big smell event in the hall, and complaints start pouring in.
That's right.
But no more of that. And we have Fat Mo's, who are pulled pork sandwiches, and the people who do the Rookery Cafe are there, and Mark Wheeler with
Copa.
Copa.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And the craziest ice cream flavors you ever had.
Yeah, it's amazing. Sometimes
we
it
have
makes
a espresso booth and then sushi. And
Yeah.
You add it all together, it sounds a little bit like you need some Alka-Seltzer. But
well, yeah, we're not recommending you eat it all at once.
Right.
Take your time. Right.
So and we have a sort of vested interest in the food court because, you know, those of us who are working it are there for 3 days.
Yeah, you want it to be good. Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
It needs to be good.
So.
And are any vendors in particular, maybe even new ones, that you are thinking kind of to highlight for folks that if they haven't been there yet this year to go for?
Well, you know, I'm not a pet owner, and this is like the type of booth that I would have just really not paid attention to. But we have this gal, Susan Dunmore, who actually was interviewed on Juno Afternoon on Wednesday, and she has pet supplies that she makes herself, and they're like these hand mittens that you can hold the leash in, you know, so your hands don't get cold when you walk the dog on the beach, or booties for the dogs. And, you know, that would have bypassed me, but then I realized this is perfect. You know, there's a lot of dog lovers in town,
yeah.
And she actually has patent pendings on a couple of her products. So.
Oh, that's cool.
That's very neat. And then, you know, Todd and Annie Fritz are from down from Dillingham. They have fur products, hats and mittens and moccasins, and they're just really a nice couple, and they've come a long ways. And, you know, they go out there, trap, and prepare the food, furs, and sew them, and so it's pretty unique products.
How many states in total are represented at the public market?
With Alaska, there's 7.
Okay.
As far as, you know, we got 3 vendors from Washington State. We got a couple from California, from Oregon, from Wyoming, and Ohio. I think those are the main ones.
Yeah, wow.
Then we have like 8 vendors from Haynes, so we kind of emptied Haynes out.
Right.
And 6 from
all
Sitka.
Here.
Yeah. And it's really, and then one of the things I learned on Wednesday when I brought 2 gals over from the public market, just randomly, hey, can you come over and get interviewed? And it turned out one was from Palmer and the other from Eagle River, and they knew all sorts of friends in common, and then they realized they were having Thanksgiving dinner together at the Driftwood, where they have kind of a collective Thanksgiving experience. And I asked them about it. They said it was just wonderful, all these friends getting together in Juneau. So.
Yeah, that's great. That sounds great. Yeah, I think that's sort of the thing, as you were saying, Steve. It ends up being just this great big social event. You know, there's many times I've gone to the public market and walked out with nothing, you know?
We should not say that in front of
but
Peter.
But, I mean, you know what I mean? Like, you know, you go, you say hi to everyone, you talk about stuff.
That's true.
And then you just go, wow, I think I should have shopped.
So. Yeah, and then there's the moment when you're accompanying your wife and you come out burdened with
that's right.
God knows how many hundreds of dollars of
what just happened to me in there.
But what's cool as a shopper is you really do get to meet the people who are making the stuff and ask them questions about it. And my wife's actually had a few people over the years make custom things for her that weren't on the racks. She said, you know, I like this fabric and this coat.
Right.
Can you do that? And boom, like a week later, she's got a coat.
That's cool. And that whole thing about, you know, the whole idea of buying from smaller, more local, that sort of thing, and truly people who are craftsmen. I mean, I'm always just struck by the amount of talent that's in Alaska when you go walk around, and not just artistic talent, but craftsmen, and even, you know, syrups and salts and all that kind of stuff that you get. I mean, all those things are amazing as well, and it just strikes me. It's really kind of a thing that I'm sure that's an unintended consequence of you developing this.
Yes.
Public market, but
right. It's a kind of unintended consequence of not making any judgments on people's products, you know.
Right.
It's like, what, just salt? But it turned out I was a customer of that. It was Sitka sea salt.
Yeah,
and,
so good.
Yeah, really good.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, they aren't here this year because they had a last-minute family emergency of some sort, but they'll be back. So.
Yeah.
And that's the way it is with a lot of the vendors. We have people who, you know, haven't been there for 5 years, but they come back after things sort out, or you know, many vendors, you know, find out their product isn't that much in demand and don't come back. But the consequence is we have a 30%, that's almost, I mean, it is consistent, 30% turnover. So if you haven't been to the public market in a couple of years, majority of the vendors you would have never seen before.
Yeah, that's right. Mm. And yeah, it's just incredible how it has it just has this great effect on businesses, and it's a low risk way for new businesses to just kind of figure out if they've got something that works for people.
That's right. And another thing, little known fact is, and I checked this out with several vendors, they come down from like Shishmaref, they got all these carved ivory and so on, and they meet Jack Tripp, who's a vendor there, and pretty soon they're supplying Jack with. Or, the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute. And so it acts as a trade show for a lot of artisans.
Yeah, even for some of the finest artwork that's made in Alaska,
yeah, exactly.
These kind of treasures that we have that is totally unique to Alaska, especially when you mention, like, the carvers from Shishmaref are here. That's an exciting thing to think about. Yeah.
Yeah, they're a really nice couple, too. Dennis Tanak and Diane, and I can't pronounce her last name, but they're... they're the real deal. They're out there, collecting the furs and preparing them and carving the ivory, and they're representing a bunch of people from that small community in the Chukchi Sea.
Yeah.
That's pretty far out.
Getting closer and closer to the Chukchi Sea all the time as well.
Yeah, I guess so.
Fortunately, yeah.
Unfortunately.
With the sea waters rising. Just remind some folks about sort of the nuts and bolts, when it's open, for how long, and how much it costs to get in, and all that kind of stuff.
Well, it's open until 7 p.m. tonight, and then on Saturday and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. We charge $7 admission for the weekend. We also have the Jack. There's another 40 vendors over there, and it's an eclectic mix of vendors. I wouldn't miss it, and we do not charge admission there. So if you're adverse to paying admission, you just go to the Jack. There's a lot to be seen there.
And visits from Santa at happening?
Thank you for reminding me that Santa wings in here at 11 a.m. on Sunday morning and will be with us until 2 p.m. And then the other thing is, all day tomorrow, it's just kind of worked out by happenstance. We have a general chorus group that will be doing singing Christmas songs. We got the Juno Cello Ensemble, 11 celloists who will be playing, as well as the Juno Lyric Opera. And this involves about average of 15 people per group, and they'll be coming in to entertain for a couple hours.
Do you have kind of a stage set up on one end of the...
Well, we just kind of informally arrange it. The cello group will be in the atrium of the main lobby, and they did that a couple of years ago, and I really enjoyed it. It's relaxing to listen to those folks, and they're so talented.
Yeah. How long does it take you to set this thing all up?
Well, it begins in July when I solicit applications, and then beginning early August, I sign all the spaces, and then... there's a lot of communication to be done, but I just come in every morning to my office, and I'm a publisher, writer-publisher for a living, but if I put aside 30 minutes in the morning, I can answer the emails, and as long as you keep up with it, then it doesn't get overwhelming. But I leave town for a week, and it's a bit of work to come back to, but it all works out.
Well, we appreciate you doing it all these years, Peter. It's such an amazing event.
And I just want to mention, before we get out there, I have a lot of support, including my wife, Sandy, who does the bookkeeping, and my nieces and nephews, Luke, Lynn, and Nellie, my brother Max's children, and my brother Jake's children, Bien and Maggie, have come down from Anchorage. And so we have a lot of support.
Yeah, that's definitely, it's the Metcalf's taking over the world.
And Steve's
there.
Children were first, too. For,
and, yeah,
yeah, yeah, even been their first employers in many cases.
Indeed,
I think Lydia might have worked for you a couple of years. So I think, it was all in the family there.
Indeed.
Well, Peter, thanks so much. Steve, thanks so much for
coming in, Andy.
As well. Although you're not selling wares,
I'll be down there checking out the Santa, because I'm a bit of a connoisseur.
Yes.
A Santa connoisseur.
Put in his shoes. You know what he's doing over there. All right, thanks guys so much. Right now, here's Bird Note.
This is Bird Note. On a brisk November day, a mysterious whale carries across the lead-gray surface of a northern bay. The notes are drawn out, eerily musical, and can be heard from far away. You're hearing the call of a male black scoter. Black scoters are sea ducks that spend the winter on saltwater bays. The unmistakable drake is feathered jet black, set off by a bright yellow knob atop its bill, a beacon on the dark water. The duck swimming alongside him, dark brown with a vivid brown and white face, is a female. Black scoters are large, strong ducks, a foot and a half long, and buoyant swimmers with a habit of cocking their tails upward. Black scoters return south from nesting on freshwater tundra ponds. Each fall, they can be found on bays all across the northern hemisphere. Through the colder months, these handsome, hardy ducks dive in search of mollusks, sea worms, and other prey. Watch for them along the shoreline where sea ducks gather, scattered among groups of golden eyes and other scoters. An unmistakable clue to their presence? That mysterious musical wail. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Dance those excess calories off and enjoy holiday visiting with more friends and neighbors at the traditional Thanksgiving Friday Barn Dance. It happens this Friday, November 27th, 7:30 p.m. at St. Anne's Parish Hall, 5th Street, downtown. Full Circle featuring Greg Berger, Mary DeSmet, and Don Rudolph will provide live music, and Tom Paul will teach and call contra dances. You don't need experience or a partner to have a good time. Discounts for students and seniors, free for JVs, sponsored by the Juno Folk Dancers. Don't miss the Friday Thanksgiving Barn Dance.
All right, and welcome back to the KTO studios. I'm Andy Klein. Taylor Beardsley and Eric Schumacher have joined me. Both are swim team members, but with different swim teams. Uh-oh, I just discovered this. Of course, they knew this all along, but Taylor, you're with the Thunder Mountain swim team. Eric, you're with JDHS.
Of course.
And you guys are, of course, can't you tell? And you are, but the two swim teams are collaborating to do Christmas tree sales, or how's it all working?
Yeah, we're both working together, and we're collectively raising money, and we're probably going to be splitting it in the end, and we're going to be using it for our travel costs, just to cover those, and, make sure that we have enough money for next season.
Yeah, absolutely. And so do you guys have kind of a goal in mind about how much money, or do you know how much money gets raised typically during the Christmas tree thing? Or
no.
Is this the first year you guys have done it, or is this a tradition in the swim team?
I know JD's been doing it for a few years,
okay.
But I didn't swim last year.
And you were out traveling last year.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. On a boat.
Yeah.
I'm on a boat.
Yeah.
That's pretty wild.
Yeah.
Gone for like a year, right?
Yeah.
I know, we missed your dad at basketball. Yeah. And Taylor, is this the first year you've been involved in doing it?
No, I've been involved all 4 years, and then I've been involved a couple years before that too, because my dad is the coach for Thunder Mountain. So I kind of just helped out beforehand as well.
So do you guys handle bringing the trees in and stuff like that? And do you do deliveries and stuff, or how does all that work?
No, you kind of just like drive to Fred Meyer's, and we're by the gas station.
Oh, okay.
There,
okay.
And we kind of have everything set up, and they put like the trees out, and we kind of just help you out in deciding which one. And yeah.
Is dealing with them kind of a pain, these Christmas trees?
Morning, I was out there. We were grabbing them out of the shipping container and setting them up and stuff like that. And there are a few on display, but most of them are in shipping containers that we can bring out for you.
Okay.
Yeah.
They're kind of wrapped up, or?
Yeah, they're in string. We can cut that and show you how it's going to look.
Yeah, yeah, right. And do you know where you get the trees?
No.
Just somewhere?
Somewhere in the lower 48.
They're not Alaskan trees?
No.
No. But no, that's cool. What are they usually around? Are they usually like between 5 and 6 feet, or do you guys price them differently based on size?
Yeah, they're differently priced for size. The prices range from about $30 to $135.
Wow, $135.
Yeah.
That's a big tree.
Yeah, big trees. I think the biggest one is about 10 feet, and we have some really small 3-footers.
The 10-foot would not fit in my house.
It wouldn't fit
not
in my
either.
House. Oh, man, it would just be busting out of the windows. But the 3-foot, that's cool. So the little ones are like $30 for a 3-foot beautiful, real Christmas tree.
And we're selling wreaths as well.
Oh, cool. Mm-hmm. Okay, how much are those?
I don't remember how much those are.
But those are nice to have.
Yeah.
You can stack them up, get a few of them. Yeah. So tell me about the funds. So it all goes to the like a collective fund for the swim team. Is that how that works? Or?
Yeah, I think it's split up in the end though between the two schools.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so you guys got both of the swim teams are out there helping. How does this? I mean, you know, you put the rivalry aside. Everything works out.
I don't really think that the swim team has much of a rivalry.
What?
We
come
the
on.
Boys, the boys team definitely.
Oh,
does.
Yeah,
yeah.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
No, but I mean, like, we practice together all season long. We have,
that's true.
We have joint Saturday morning practices, so. And, like, we've all grown up swimming together because
Glacier
we all
swim
on GSP.
And, yeah, right.
So I don't really think that.
Yeah, no, we're all good friends. Yeah, as soon as high school season's over, we're all in the same pool.
Okay.
Yeah.
I guess I'm trying to pump up some sort of rivalry here. It's my fault. I shouldn't drive a wedge between you like this.
No, I think that's more like our basketball team.
Totally, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't like each other.
No.
That's good. That's competition. That's good. It's sports. Let me ask you about this actual swim season and the swim team, how it's so for Thunder Mountain. You guys, when's the season for the swim team?
It's about 2 weeks before school starts up until Halloween weekend. That's regions. And then for the kids who qualify for state, that's the first weekend of November.
Oh, so season just got over.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool. So how did it go for Thunder Mountain?
I think our team was really young this year, and we had lots of new swimmers, so it was really cool getting to know, like, new people that, because I've been growing up and swimming with everyone for, like, as long as I can remember.
But you're one of the seniors this year? Oh, yeah. So that's,
yeah.
So you'd sort of...
So it was really cool, like, getting to know the newer people, and then, we swam pretty good, better than our first meet in, Sitka this year. So,
but kind of met your goals or tried to get to the expectations you guys had and felt like you met them?
Yeah,
yeah,
definitely.
Good. Great.
Yeah.
How about JDHS?
We did pretty well. At state, our girls took second place.
Awesome.
Yeah, and our boys took the academic award.
Well, that's something.
Yeah.
That's something to hold on to.
Yeah.
All three of you?
Yeah, all three of us.
All three of them.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's what scholastic sports is supposed to be about, you know,
mm-hmm.
student athletes. So that's good.
Yeah. And the past 2 years, our girls have won state. But last year, we lost three of our really fast seniors. And so that put us down a little bit. But I mean, we swam really well this year.
But to get second place on what might be called a rebuilding year is really great.
Yeah.
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 That's awesome.
No, we did really
so
well.
Great.
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And it must have been kind of interesting to come back after being gone a year, right, and get back in the pool and all that. Did it take a while to get back in shape and all that stuff again? Or?
Well, I got back last January. And
been training since.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
So you were kind of ready.
Yeah, I was ready for this high school season.
Yeah.
For sure.
Cool. All right. And are you a senior too?
No, I'm a junior.
Oh, okay. So swimming next year.
Mm-hmm.
What's the prediction for next year's team? Looking good. Or did you lose guys or?
Well, we're losing one senior.
Uh huh.
Which we lost one last year, but we're also going to be getting, I think. Well, that's one senior guy.
Okay.
Forgetting about the girls.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're losing a few
right.
fast.
Well, that's
girls
what happens.
Well.
They're losing like half their
really?
Like A relay.
Yeah.
Oh man.
No, 3/4 of their relay is gone.
Wow.
Next year.
But we're getting some good upcoming
cool.
freshmen.
And Thunder Mountain?
Yeah.
Looking good next year?
Yeah.
Strong?
Yeah.
Building stronger all the time?
Yeah.
Awesome. All right, the Christmas trees, let's run through it one more time. How can people get them and where do they go and that kind of stuff?
Well, you go to Fred Meyer's, we're by the gas station, and our hours for Monday through Friday are 5 p.m. to 7 p.m., and the Saturday through Sunday is 10 a.m. to 5 p.m.
Great. Thanks so much, you guys, for coming in. Go get a Christmas tree. Fred Meyer, I'm going to go. I don't have one yet. I got to go get one.
I might, too.
There you go. Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to get the 10-footer, and I'm just going to jam it in the house somehow. That's what's going to happen. All
I
right.
I want to be there.
Eric and Taylor. Yeah, you can delivery. Eric and Taylor, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
All right. That's it for a Juno Afternoon for today. Thanks to all of my guests who came in. Appreciate your coming into the studio on this what's becoming a windy, blustery day. And strong winds are an advisory tonight. And it's going to be windy and rainy with lows around 36 degrees. And then Saturday is going to be heavy rains at times and highs around 42. And that ends up being the forecast for the rest of the weekend. Heavy rain at times and highs right around 42 degrees throughout the rest of the weekend. Lows around 35 at night. Hopefully that's not affecting the snow up on Eagle Crest too much. Thanks again to everyone who came in for Juno Afternoon, and thank you for listening. I'm Andy Klein, and have a great weekend.
The officers were able to shout to the suspect and make communication with him. And at that point, they were able to get him to surrender.
The shooting attack on a Colorado Planned Parenthood clinic comes to an end. For Friday, November 27th, it's All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Ari Shapiro. We'll have the latest from Colorado Springs this hour. Also, how French people have responded to attacks in Paris by embracing their national emblems.
The flag, the national anthem, the Marseillaise, unlike in the U.S., these are not easy symbols for people to gather behind.
Also, the smartphone takes some of the frenzy out of Black Friday, and a tool once used to build bridges now helps people plan for retirement.
I think that this is a really good way to protect yourself against living much, much longer than your resources.
Plus, actor Rainn Wilson reveals the truth about his pet, Zonky, after the news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Spear. Authorities in Colorado Springs, Colorado, say a standoff with a gunman inside a Planned Parenthood clinic there has ended, with the gunman surrendering to law enforcement. At least 11 people were injured, five of them police officers. Lieutenant Catherine Buckley briefed reporters this past hour, saying law enforcement still needs to sweep the building to determine whether there are other victims still inside.
We're going to have to work through the scene because we are now treating it as a crime scene and investigating it.
Both federal and local law enforcement were involved in the hours-long standoff, at times coming under fire from the gunman. John Southers is the mayor of Colorado Springs and says it was a difficult...